Hey there, birth nerd. You're listening to the Birth Worker Podcast. My name is Kylie Banks, and I am totally obsessed with birth and equally obsessed with business. And this is the show where I help women turn their passion for birth into a sustainable, profitable, and most importantly, impactful career. All right, let's get into it. Welcome back to the Birth Worker Podcast. You're listening to episode 127. Today on the podcast, I am sharing a conversation that I had with Brett Larkin. Brett Larkin is a very interesting person because we have a ton in common. She started as a yoga teacher, and slowly over time, she became really, really successful through her online channels. And eventually she ended up creating a yoga teacher training course. And my journey is very similar. I started as a birth doula, and then I created childbirth education courses, and those became very successful. And slowly over time, I started to create a doula training program and several programs since then. So my journey is very similar to Brett's. And that's one of the reasons I love this conversation. One of the things that we laughed about a little is that when people ask her what she does, she's inclined to say like she's a yoga teacher, but also really it's like she's the CEO of this like amazing seven-figure business, which is very different than being a yoga teacher. And I could say the same at this point. When people ask me what I do, my first instinct is to say a birth doula. And though that is true, it's like, what do I really do with most of my time? It's be a CEO and be in that CEO role. So loved the conversation with Brett. She also wrote and published a book this year, which we talk about. She has gone completely viral and so successful on YouTube, which we talk about. So really, this is just a phenomenal conversation with someone who is a wonderful human, a mom, a yogi, and a phenomenal businesswoman also. So excited to see what you think. And of course, you'll find all of Brett's links and info in the show notes if you're interested in that. I hope you enjoy. How long have you been, you know, into health and fitness and wellness, and what brought you to yoga? Like, I want to hear like the conception story of like you getting into yoga.
Well, that's a funny story. And I actually talk about it in one of the first chapters of my book because it's not an altruistic story. I had started college, and at that point, my dream of being a professional dancer was sort of dying. I was really into Pilates, and there was this really cute guy as part of my college cohort who was very zen. He meditated all the time, and I really wanted to get out of the friend zone, so I wanted him to notice me. And he kept telling me, you should try yoga, because he knew I was into dance and Pilates and all these things, and he was encouraging me to meditate with him, which I was, you know, doing just because I liked him. And he said, you should try yoga. And I just rolled my eyes, and I was like, why? Yoga's for wimps. And I was so desperate that I decided, you know what? Okay, I will go to one class, but only if it's the most intense yoga I can find, because I don't want to hang out with these wimps. So I found Bikram Hot Yoga, which for those of you who don't know, is doing yoga in 102 degree heat. And I loved it. I fell in love because that particular form of yoga is competitive. I mean, you're supposed to be competing with yourself, but as I write about in the book, I was competing with the girl in the front row. I was, you know, it really fit who I was at that time. And it was my first taste test into, even though ultimately that style of yoga is not what is balancing to me, which I go on to explain in the book, we have these three major different personality types. The style of yoga you're initially attracted to is probably not the one that you should be doing long term. But it was enough to get me started. And then from there, I was able to start exploring different styles. And me and this guy never went anywhere, but the true love story developed, which was that between me and yoga. And it's been hot and heavy and serious ever since. So,
okay, this is hilarious. I have only dabbled in yoga very, very briefly. I spent the greater part of my like 20s as like a competitive weightlifter. And so I got really into yin yoga, which is really like long hold poses, like 3-4 minute holds.
And I'm so interested, like, if I kept going down the yoga rabbit hole, like, what would be my eventual love? That's like my question.
Well, you can buy my book and you can take the quiz, because the book is full of quizzes that matches you to like your soulmate postures, so you can design your own personalized routine. So I'll send it to you.
Oh my gosh, absolutely. Oh, I cannot wait to get my hands on this. At the time of recording this, it hasn't launched yet, but when this comes out, it will have launched. So very, very excited to get my hands on that. So tell me a little bit more about, when did you decide, okay, you said that yoga became like your new love. When did you decide to make yoga your career?
So that was a much longer process. I was in denial, and maybe some of the people listening to this can relate, where, you know, you're maybe really interested in birth, or you're really interested in the pregnancy process. Or for me, it was like, I was really into yoga, like to the point where it's all I wanted to talk about with my friends. I remember talking to my dad at dinner, and I just, you know, yada, yada, yada. And he just kept saying, maybe you should do something with this yoga thing. And I was like, psh, dad, no one makes money teaching yoga. Like, no, I can't do that. And I also didn't have the confidence, to be honest. I didn't have the confidence to teach. I felt very scared about sharing my voice and putting myself out there. So it was an extremely slow process. When I did the yoga teacher training, I was saying, you know, I'm doing this just for me. I'm doing this for my own knowledge, for my own personal practice, denial, denial, denial. Then I moved across the country. I really missed the teachers that I was originally studying with. And I decided, you know, why don't I was too scared to go to a yoga studio and actually put myself out there and apply for a job. But I was like, why don't I record a sequence, like one of my old teacher's favorite sequences, so I can remember it. And I don't know how I put it on YouTube, to be honest. That part's a bit of a blur. I was very used to filming myself I used to audition for all these dance camps and dance trainings. So the idea, and you'd have to make your own, you know, choreography and film yourself, like an audition tape, essentially. So I was kind of familiar with that process from, you know, early in my life. And so for me, it felt less scary to film a little video. It was mainly so I could remember this sequence for my own personal reasons. And I put it on YouTube, and I remember being really shocked when people also viewed it. And like, I don't even think I knew if I put it public or private. And they were commenting and saying they liked this sequence. And it was like bells going off in my mind. I was like, okay, I'll upload another one. And then I started figuring out, like, oh, maybe I should upload one every week. And then I started thinking, maybe I should ask what kind of sequences people want to see. And it really helped build that confidence. And it was kind of a weird way to get into this, because it was building that confidence on YouTube that gave me the confidence to actually go to a studio and start teaching in person. So this was where yoga was kind of my secret side gig. So I was doing it at night, I was doing it on the weekend. And that little voice started to say, like, could this be your job? Like, could this be a full-time thing? And I was like, if I could just make $60,000 a year, which was less than I was making at my corporate salary at the time. But I was like, if I could just make $60,000 a year doing this, like, that would be amazing. Like, that would be a dream. Like, that would be incredible. And then there was a pivotal event that kind of made me really see that that could happen. So tell me if you want to go there next, but I don't want to.
Yeah, I would. I just want to mention that I absolutely love just the story that I've heard so far, because it's similar to my journey as a doula. So I did start practicing in person when I started my doula business, but I didn't wait until I was fully booked out in person to then grow my online business. So it's like growing an online business, like creating ebooks or online birth courses and things like that. Yes, it's like the cherry on top of an already successful in-person business, but it doesn't have to just be that way. It's such a great way to get your foot in the door, to shake out all of those nerves like you did, and to just kind of do your own thing until it clicks. And through that, you will gain the confidence to go support people in person. So absolutely love that. I also want to mention, I don't know if you know this, but most doula training programs, it's like a 3-day in-person, like 12-hour type of training, which blows my mind. So just hearing that, knowing that yoga teacher training is 200 hours and probably everybody goes on to do even more than that. I love hearing that you were friends with the people that you did that training with. And I really wish that I wish that was normal in the doula world. I went on to build a course that is over 200 hours for doulas, because I just didn't like the quick weekend, you know, turnaround courses that were just like pushing out doulas who had no clue what they were doing. But I just have to say, very, very impressed with the way that, you know, the yoga teacher trainings run that, not only for connection and community, but also I'm sure you really learn a lot in 200 hours. So keep going.
Well, we can dive more into that because those all used to be in person too. So we can get there in the story. I think for people listening, I think looking back, what I think I did well, even though I literally felt like I was, you know, going to crap my pants the entire time. And I write about this in the book too. Like every time I had to upload a YouTube video, I was like shaking and it just was extremely uncomfortable for so long. But the thing that I think I did that was beneficial is I just took whatever step I could that felt like all the steps felt scary. But for me, just because of my background, that step of filming myself rather than going to a studio and pitching myself felt less scary. And I did that. Like, so it's just really looking at where you are. And it's like, whatever step you can take that feels the least terrifying, just do that. Like, regardless of what it is, if it's teaching a friend or if it's, helping a friend with their pregnancy or whatever, just any step you can take, take it. And what this did is that the YouTube channel grew and I got invited to this event that YouTube was holding called, I don't remember, but they have these creator days. And I was so excited. I was like, I'm going to go and get to meet all these people who also make YouTube videos. I think I had 30,000 YouTube subscribers at the time. I show up at this event. Everyone has like 100,000, 300,000, 500,000. I don't even know how I like made the invite list. But going to this event was probably the turning point of my life and career. I mean, it's one of those days that's like seared in my brain, like the birth of my children, because I basically went there and I met all these people who were making a full-time living on YouTube. I met a guy who made woodworking videos, woodworking tutorial videos. I met, of course, 7,000 beauty people. I met a guy who made like videos about how to use your DSLR camera. And he had this huge YouTube channel. And he was also one of the panelists. And I got to speak to a couple of the panelists at this event, which was so amazing. One of them was Tati Westbrook, who, if anyone's into beauty YouTubing, she has like 7 million subscribers now. And I think I met her when she had 300,000 at this event. So it's just really incredible. But this DSLR camera YouTuber, he told me, well, what are you selling off of YouTube? And I was like, what? I don't know. Like nothing. And he's like, oh, well, here, I have these DVDs. This is how old this story is, by the way. I'm like,
were you making
myself.
Ad revenue at that point?
I was making a tiny bit, but nothing like significant. Yeah. So he whips out this DVD, Kaylee. Okay. And he's like, yeah, this is my DVD. And this is my how to use a DSLR camera like DVD. And I'm like, but isn't that what your YouTube videos are about? Like, why would anyone buy that? And he's like, oh no, people buy it. They want to go deeper and get more information. And so he hands me this DVD and I look at it and it's pretty slick. Like I can tell that it's like nicely filmed. Like he spent money on it. And I was like, how much did this cost you to make this look so nice? And I can't remember. I think he told me like $10,000 or $15,000. And I was like, and he's like, but it's made me over $1 million. And that's when I fell over. I was like, wait, what?
Isn't that funny? When we get like, started, we're like, no way. But now I laugh. I'm like, oh, only $15,000 to put that together? Cool, let's do it tomorrow. But I've built the business where we can do that. So funny that that's
at that point, that like investing $10,000 or $15,000 in like a hobby business felt terrifying. Yeah. Like I was quivering. But when he told me he then made $1 million, I just couldn't believe it. And I remember driving home. This is like one of the most important drives of my life, driving home from this event in my little like whatever car I had at the time. I think it was a Subaru. And my mind was just like blowing up. It was like, oh my gosh, like I need to sell stuff off my YouTube channel. And then I failed a billion times. Like the first thing I tried to sell was some like ab workout thing. Then I tried to sell some beginner thing. Then I was like, okay, well, the thing that people don't have in the videos is yoga props, like bolsters and blankets. So I made this prop kit that I was selling. That one kind of worked, but of course it was a nightmare because I was like assembling all these props in my home, international shipping, all these problems. And then somehow I had the good sense, I think by talking to other YouTubers, which I think is a really essential part of this story, which is like being around people who are doing what you want to do. Because if I hadn't met these other people, like I could touch these people, like I could touch them, like I knew they were real. Like we hear stories on the internet of like maybe people doing stuff. It's totally different when you're in a room of like 500 other full-time YouTubers. So I somehow got the good sense talking to another YouTuber to start a membership site because he was like, I have this membership site. And again, I was like, why would anyone pay for that? They can just do the videos on YouTube. And he was like, trust me, trust me. So I launched my membership site and that still exists. It's the Uplifted Yoga membership. So it's yoga classes and yoga courses. And if you're a yoga nerd, like you'll love the membership because that's really who I designed it for. But pretty soon after that membership started taking off, you know, I got my first 100 members, couple hundred members. Everyone started asking me for yoga teacher training. They were like, we really like you. We want to do yoga teacher training with you online because all my stuff was online. And at the time, online yoga teacher training was not sanctioned by Yoga Alliance or anyone. Like the whole thought of it was just bizarre. So I just kept thinking, this is weird. Like, why are people asking for this? No one's going to buy it. No one's going to want it. I remember being in my gym on the elliptical and just like really puzzled. Like, people are telling me they want this, but this makes no logical sense because it's not going to be approved by Yoga Alliance and no one's ever done anything like this before. Thank goodness I listened to the voice that was like, let's just do this. And so I pulled a Jared Polin is the name of the DSLR guy. I spent like $10,000, $15,000. I filmed this like gorgeous training, terrified. Like I was like, I could literally just be out all of this money. And I'm still working full time at this point, by the way. And that became what is the first online yoga teacher training. And it's gone on to be wildly successful. People bought it, even though it wasn't technically Yoga Alliance sanctioned. I met every single Yoga Alliance requirement. It's just the only reason it wasn't sanctioned is because it was online. I definitely got some hate and pushback from other people in the industry who said yoga can't be taught online. You know, what you're doing is unethical. So it was interesting. And then, you know, it was a very healthy business. I was really it was me and one other woman in the space for 5 years, just her and I. And then 2020 happened, right? And the entire world joined us and all my marketing had to change, Kaylee. Like it was crazy. I'm interested to hear your story about 2020 because I had most of my marketing was about explaining to people that yoga teacher training online was valid. Like it was a valid way to learn. And after 2020, I didn't have to explain any of that anymore. We used to have 2 weeks in our curriculum that like taught people Zoom and the controls. Like that's how new we were because I was using Zoom in like 2014. And we were like, okay, we can delete these 2 weeks of the curriculum. Like everyone's been to like a Zoom birthday party like before training. It was crazy. So yeah, the landscape completely shifted and it's been a wild ride, let me tell you. So,
oh my gosh. Oh yeah. My gosh. There are so many different rabbit holes we can go down. Okay. My first question is just so I can get an understanding how, obviously there's more than just two people in this niche now. It's like everybody, right?
Like, it's like everybody. It's like 200,000 people.
Yes. Like yes. a yoga training company that's not online now is
absurd.
The weird one. Yeah.
Yes. Yes.
That is so fascinating. And did you go on to ever end up getting accredited by the Yoga Alliance?
Of course. I also taught some in-person trainings with a business partner of mine. So I had the accreditation for like those trainings.
Yeah.
But it was actually hysterical because sometimes the certificates look different and everything. But I remember right before COVID hit, Yoga Alliance was like, we're worried some of your online people are like submitting and they haven't studied with you in person. And I was like, listen, like, no, me and my admin were like, don't worry about this. Even though, again, I felt the whole thing was ridiculous. Literally 2020, they're like, everything online is sanctioned. Like, we give our blessing. Like, it was just so ironic the way that all happened.
It just goes to prove how, like, fake all of the certification type of stuff is.
Oh,
because,
yes.
Everyone now, everyone can.
They're
do
like,
it
wait,
online.
We need to keep people paying all the dues.
Exactly.
Like,
they just need money. Oh,
it's
my gosh,
all
that's
money.
Hilarious.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's really funny.
That's why, if people are listening to this, I mean, do your research and study with the teacher you want to study with. I mean, the accreditations, I don't want to say they're completely meaningless, but most of them, it is just a financial thing. And I tell people when they graduate from our programs, it's like you do not have to register with any of these certifying bodies. We walk them through the pros and cons. I think that's a personal decision, but yeah, I would really encourage people to do your own research. Just something having some stamp of approval doesn't really mean what would like to think it means.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. I love that you say that. And I definitely know that we would get along if I knew that already, but now I know it even more because we feel the same way. Doulas are actually not regulated. Like there's no like accreditation board for birth doulas right now. I hope it stays that way forever. It's really like anyone and their mom can go and just call themselves a doula trainer and print out certifications.
And so there's no, it doesn't have to be a minimum number of hours nothing. Or cover certain topics, like nothing.
Literally nothing. And I even tell, it's hard for people to wrap their brain around that because it just doesn't
make sense. Yeah, I'm struggling right now.
Yeah. I even tell my students, like, you can start an LLC and literally go print out a certification and certify yourself as a doula. Like, it's like fake. It's like a certified, I don't know, lawnmower or, you know, a certified mm-hmm, babysitter. Mm-hmm. Of course, there's like, you could take CPR classes and you can like do all these things, but there's no like accreditation board like overseeing any of this stuff, which I love. Like, I'm so like against the system, do what you want. Like,
don't. Yeah, me too. And that's so beautiful because I mean, I'm sure there's people who have like an 8-hour thing and you said yours is over 200 hours. Yeah. I mean, that's similar for us. Like our training is 200 hours. Most of the online teacher trainings you see, which are cheap, you know, I'm the most expensive one in the industry because this has been my price. It's always been my price. It's not changing. But they're basically just like, here's an Excel spreadsheet, go teach some friends yoga classes. Maybe they have some videos you watch, but it's kind of like a scavenger hunt. It's like, go do all these things and then fill it out on this spreadsheet and submit it. And like, to me, that's crazy. I'm like, that's not a course. That's like telling that's someone to like stay busy and scavenger hunt things for, and you know, no one graduates because no one can do that for 200 hours. So it's like completely different from our program where we mail you a manual. There is literally 100 hours of video content, you know, 60 hours of live interaction on Zoom. I mean, I'm sure your program is, you know, similarly, and like, it's very well thought out and we take ourselves seriously. Like our exam at the end is serious because I take yoga seriously. Yoga Alliance, they don't have an exam. It's just, it's so bizarre. Yeah. It's very bizarre.
Oh my gosh. So interesting. I really love, one of my favorite things here is just listening to your story and how you have built an incredibly impactful, like not only successful, yes, the success is cool, but an impactful business. Let me ask you, how many yoga teachers have you trained since you started?
Over 3,000, probably.
That's phenomenal. That is phenomenal. And, you know, it's so funny because, you know, if we would have asked you, I don't know when you started, but if we would have asked you 15 years ago, you would have been like, ha, yeah, right. Like, I'm nervous to go even teach yoga to people in person. And now look at you now. Not only are you teaching yoga, but you're teaching the yoga teachers and over 3,000 of them, which is wild.
It is really crazy to reflect back on the journey. I mean, I think we all still have a part of us that's going to feel like an imposter, like with this book launch that I just went through, you know, it's like, there's always like that next level of like, oh my gosh, it's a book. It's going to be around for like, there's always a part of you that's going to feel like an imposter. And I feel that too. Like every time I put out a new certification, it's like, do I know enough? Is it enough? And so I think it's important for people to hear that, like that never is going to completely go away. It's just taking action anyway. And getting the support. I mean, for my most recent manual, for my new certification I'm launching, which is combining yoga and life coaching and embodiment work, like I hired a research assistant, like everything is footnoted. And investing in that, even at a business of my size, felt a little extravagant. But I was like, no, this is what I value. This is what's happening. You know, it's always going to feel scary, whether it's like paying for the nicer software or, you know, getting the additional support. Or I just think people need to know, like what you said earlier, like I'm just a normal person. I'm struggling with all the, you know, the same insecurities and complexities and you know, just doing the best I can to move forward despite fear.
Yeah. And it, you know, it is so much easier if you have the friends who can really hold you and explain that, look, this $15,000 turned into $1 million. And at first you don't really believe it because that's like bigger numbers than you've ever seen in your life. And you're like, there's no way because they're just a normal person. You see them as a normal person. There's no way that they made $1 million. And then you do it for yourself and you're like, oh, actually, yeah, that $10,000 investment did turn into $1 million. And then it becomes easier and easier. as far as investing in your business. That's my personal experience, because now I tell the story of I invested in Amy Porterfield's DCA. Did you ever take DCA?
No, I've heard of her and it though. Yeah. That's awesome. Yeah.
Yeah. I took Amy Porterfield's DCA, spent $2,000, made $14,000. I went and did another program with someone named Kate McGibbon, spent $4,000, made $20,000. I went and took a program with a woman named Rose, spent $15,000, made $100,000. And so it's just the more you do it, the more you prove to yourself that it's possible, essentially. And then you get to a point where you realize that, no, your students deserve for you to hire a research assistant and to put the money into that. And you're not even nervous that it's going to come back. Like, you know, it's going to come back tenfold in the next, you know, couple of months. So,
but this is interesting though, because my question for you is like, what do you think you did differently in those courses and masterminds and all the things that they were than some other people? Because we always see, and I'm sure you see this in your own community as well, because I'll have a cohort of like 300 hour teacher trainers who are, you know, that's a more advanced certification. So that course, we're very business focused as well as yoga focused. It's like a dual track mastermind and yoga training. And it's inevitable. Like, some of them just have, like, they're getting the clients. Like, one of them posted on our Facebook retreat yesterday, she just had a sold out retreat. Like, and others are struggling, right? And so, like, what is it, do you think, that, you know, I'm sure there were people in Amy Porterfield's DCA with you that have not seen those strides or seen that income yet? Like, what do you think that you did differently?
Such a good question. I love it. There are a few things that I want to mention. One is that timing for me in my niche was perfection. It was just perfect. There weren't a lot of people doing what I did when I started. And so it was a lot easier back then to find the success than a lot of the other, than people trying now. And that was with one. I became a doula, and then I launched a bunch of birth courses. Those birth courses became super successful. My audience turned to me and said, "Kylie, we want a doula training program." So very similar to you. And then I pivoted and made a doula training program. So by the time I launched the doula training program, it was inevitable that that was going to be super successful, because I had built up this audience with my birth courses. But when I launched those birth courses, there weren't a lot of birth courses online. And when I created my doula training program, there really wasn't another program. And to be honest, there still isn't another program out there like it. A lot of business coaches tell you to try and be like a niche of one. It's like the blue ocean versus the red ocean. There's a book called The Blue Ocean. And I absolutely am. I was when I started, and I still am now in my niche, training doulas. So I'm very lucky in that way. But two other things, I will say that I'm very relatable, and I think that goes a really long way. So this is such a weird thing to say about yourself, but it's like, I'm funny, but I'm not too funny that people are intimidated. I'm cute, but I'm not too cute that people are intimidated. I'm nice, but I'm not too nice that people think I'm a pushover, right? And so I'm like, I'm right in this like really like weird middle area where people are very attracted to that and really relate to that. And then the other thing I want to say is that I had an unwavering belief in myself. And when I look at my own students who find success, and success could look like becoming booked out in person, it could be like getting people to sign up for their freebie, you know, hosting a workshop and people actually pay for it, whatever that looks like. The ones who are out there finding success are the ones who have that unwavering belief. And I know that that's like, feels like such a cop out, and that feels like so hard, because like, why would you have that belief if you don't have that proof that like you can do it? But I will say that belief took me a really long way. And just that tangible advice for that, I talked about this on a class I led last night. I never said Kylie needs to be successful tomorrow. I never said Kylie needs to have $100,000 tomorrow. I said, I want this to work 10 years from now, 5 years from now. And so whenever I had a quote unquote failure, whenever I made a post and nobody liked it, whenever I did a launch and nobody bought it, I never let it mean something about me. And I think a lot of people can get in their head and they can say, there's something wrong with me. I'm not good enough. Will this ever work? I don't think it'll ever work. I literally never did any of that. It was more of like a game for me. I'm very competitive with myself. So it was like, oh, okay, wow, I spent 200 hours on this thing and only made one sale. That sucks. Next time, let's try and make two sales. And next time, let's try and make three sales. And because I thought of it that way, I never got down on myself. And I always had that like urge to keep going. And so I think that definitely helped.
I think what you're describing as the last thing is really the thing, right? Because it is having basically what entrepreneurship and what all of this forces a human to do is to have faith and belief in something that they cannot see. The Guru Singh, who teaches the Kundalini Yoga Teacher Training with me, we kind of co-run it. He's an incredible, he's 75 years old. I mean, just absolute incredible wisdom. But he always talks about how the word confidence is a conjoined word that if you break it down in Latin, it means con with faith. It means with faith. So confidence actually means doing something with faith, because you don't see the result yet. And then you do see the result, and that's how it comes. And I think you're right. I think that's where a lot of people struggle. They want the quick win. They want the quick result. They try something once or twice. And if it doesn't work, they either make that a reflection on them or that the world doesn't like them, or they make it mean something that it doesn't work. When really it's like, I threw spaghetti at the wall. It's really funny. In one of my most advanced trainings, I actually screen share my email software with them. So I'm like, these are how many funnels didn't work, because it's like so messy. It's literally like there's like 300 things in there, and it's like absolutely terrifying for anyone to like visually consume. So, but I show it to them because I love how you described it as like a game with yourself, because I think if people can get into that mindset and just have that unwavering, unshaking belief in themselves and what they want to share and their mission in the world, and then everything else is just a game like Tetris of like figuring it out and being willing to try a lot of stuff, I think that's maybe where the magic happens.
You know what's so funny is that people want the quick win, and so they get down on themselves because a launch fails or no one's buying their ebook or whatever. And so they give up because they want that quick win. But maybe they don't give up. Maybe they like keep one foot in and just kind of like half-ass it, for lack of a better term, for years and years, and it never clicks. But it's the person who says, I don't need the quick win. Let me like put all my eggs in this basket of entrepreneurship and just pray and work for the 10-year success. Those are the people who actually find success a lot faster, typically in, you know, 1 year, 2 years, 3 years, which is so funny. So it's like the people who want the long-term success find it faster. The people who want the fast success potentially never even find it. Wild.
Well, I think you'll like this. In my 300-hour teacher training, we have this lecture with slides that people love. And we have three big words. We have hobby and jobby and like then like job and career. Because I think what you're describing, the half in, half out, is like where a lot of yoga teachers end up, and maybe birth workers too, but that's why I'm sharing this to see if it resonates, is like that jobby place where it's like, it's not a hobby. Because I say, like, if you just want this to be a hobby, like you just want to teach your friends and family, you just want to kind of teach some neighbors, like that's beautiful. But be aligned in that and don't be whining and crying and victiming that you're not, you know, like a six-figure yoga business. Like this is, I have a lot of people do journaling on what, like, what does success mean to you? Right. And then a lot of people get stuck in that jobby place where it's like, I think that's kind of what you're saying, right? It's like one foot in, one foot out. Like they're charging for it, but undercharging. They like kind of want to do it, but they're not really serious about it. You know, it's kind of this flip-flop, and that's a really dangerous area to be in. And really defining what success means to you is so important, because I give the example of like, if my definition of success was like, I'm teaching at in-person festivals to groups of 300 people and leading massive successful retreats, according to that definition, I am a failure. And I could tell myself that story. Some days I do. But the reality is, you know, online's my thing. It's not in person. And while I do love leading things in person, I'm leading something in Miami in just a couple of weeks for a very small group. But like, the season of my life I'm in right now with two little kids, is that's not the priority. I think that might come later. So getting really clear on what success looks like for you, like, does it look like working with three intimate clients a month? Does it look like running a big doula company where you have like 20 doulas working for you? Or otherwise, you can just always tell yourself you're a failure. There's always going to be an angle in which to do that to yourself. And the brain will do that, because that's just how the brain works. It's a problem-solving machine. So it is always going to skew negative.
Yes. And what you've done, and I've done it too, is we've stepped outside of like this status quo role. So like, you were the weird one doing yoga only online. Like, how quote unquote weird is that? But like, look at you, like, look at how many people wanted that. And look at how many people now want to do what you do, because you kind of like, you know, made that first step and let everyone follow you like through that door. You opened that door for so many people. And same with me. When I had my daughter, I didn't want to attend births in person for a while, like most people do when they have, you know, their own children. I have a newborn. I don't want to be on call. If I would have done status quo doula work, I would have quit. I would have just become a stay-at-home mom, or I couldn't afford that. So I would have gone back to work somewhere else. And I was like, no, I don't feel like I have to like be stuck in the status quo role. There's so many ways to impact people's births beyond just a, you know, showing up to their house in person. To be honest, a lot of people don't even want a doula in person. They just want a mentor or a coach or a friend that they can text or learn from, things like that. And so when I really said, screw what everyone else is doing, I'm going to do it my own way, that again, it opened the door for like so many people to follow me. And it's just been so fulfilling in so many different ways.
I love that. It's like that creative out of the box thinking. Cause yeah. I agree with you. I mean, some people are like, I don't want someone to come over and see my messy house, or, you know, germs into the house, or like people have a million different reasons. And I mean, I thought online yoga teacher training sounded crazy. And it's like, look at us now. The world is so unpredictable. And I think, yeah, just thinking really creatively, that's what entrepreneurship is about.
Now, are you still doing YouTube videos like every single week?
Oh, hell yeah.
That's awesome. Yeah.
So it was really hard for me to let go of every single week. Eventually, I was like, I need to let, because I mean, it was really like every single week. Like I was on my honeymoon, I was giving birth, like it was still going. And so I cut back to every other week. That's where I am right now. I think I've been in that season for a year and a half, I want to say, mainly just to focus on the book, writing my book, and just having a little more bandwidth. Now that the book is out in the world, I kind of do want to go back to weekly, just because I really believe in the power of YouTube and I know my students find me there. So I think this is another thing to touch on here, is just really leaning into what you do love in your business and what's fun. I love creating videos. I've always loved creating videos. I mean, when I'm not filming yoga videos, like I helped my son make like little train videos of his cars and stuff. Like I'm teaching him how to edit. I've always loved that creative process. And of course, I have a full-time editor. I don't edit my own videos anymore. I mean, I do little things here and there. Like I did a couple things yesterday, but that's something I love. And so really bringing that to the forefront of my business. I'm not huge on Instagram. Like I'm not huge on TikTok. I'm not huge on Twitter. I think following your passion and really picking a platform and showing up there consistently has worked for me. And I tell myself, like, this is enough, right? You will go crazy trying to be everywhere all the time. And so I think that's another maybe just fun tip that we can give people. Or I just always try to lean into like, what's fun, right? Because entrepreneurship, I do think, has a lot of challenges and it will force you to grow, and that can feel uncomfortable. So there's already a lot of discomfort. So if what you're doing doesn't bring you like actual joy, I think the odds of success are extremely small. So really just thinking about like, what's your zone of genius? What lights you up? What would you do? Like most of the things I do even if I weren't paid, which I know sounds crazy, but like that's how much I genuinely enjoy facilitating certain calls in our trainings, filming things. I think they underestimate that and they just think everything needs to be hard work. And I'm like, it will be hard work. So find what you love and like make that the forefront, and don't get overwhelmed thinking you need to be everywhere all the time. What's that movie? Everywhere, all the time, all at once. Mm-hmm. Like it's just a recipe for burnout.
Yeah. Oh, I absolutely love it. And it goes back to something that you said earlier, where we need to screw what everybody else is doing and figure out what kind of business we want to run. We shouldn't look to someone else and say, oh, they're making, you know, beauty videos and they're really successful, so maybe I should make beauty videos too. Or they're running in-person retreats and they're really successful, so maybe I should run in-person retreats. No, absolutely not. Like, please do not like go into entrepreneurship like that, because hopefully those people who are doing those things are tapping into their zone of genius and that's why they're successful. They're not successful because the retreat, or because they're not even successful because the YouTube channel or the Instagram or anything like that. They're successful because that's their zone of genius. So if you hate doing YouTube and you go and try and create a YouTube channel, I can promise you it's not going to be successful like at all. But that's okay, because there's other ways that you can tap into your genius. There's people who I follow who have multi I don't follow them, and I'll get into that in a second. There's people who have multi-million dollar businesses and they don't even have social media. They just have an email list and they're email marketers and that's what they do. Phenomenal. There are people who just have Instagram. There's people who just have YouTube. So I absolutely love that you're helping people decide to like narrow down, but then narrow down on the thing that you actually enjoy. And I just want to make a point. I've talked about this on the podcast before, but I even got to the point in my business where I had a super successful business, but it was a business that I didn't love. And I did a whole series about be careful about the business you're creating. And is it a business that's going to fit with your lifestyle? Don't try and just do the thing to become successful. Because for most of the people listening to this, they don't want to be like multi-million dollar entrepreneurs. Most people would not thrive in that role. And that's really okay. That shouldn't be the goal for everybody. There's a lot of people out there who just want to be a doula for their neighbors and their friends who are just pregnant themselves and they're interested in birth work. So they take a doula training instead of a birth course. That's totally fine. And really what I want to just say is that before you go and like set goals based on other people, make sure you tune in with your own intuition and really follow that. I wanted to ask you, is YouTube really like the gift that keeps on giving? Like, do you have videos from years ago that are still just getting hundreds of thousands of views, or is this a myth?
No, it's not a myth. It is true. Yeah. My YouTube channel is the gift that keeps on giving. Yeah. Again, it's changed. Everyone came on YouTube in 2020, so it's a lot harder to grow now, let's be honest. But I was doing another interview with a, you know, beautiful colleague who has a business similar to mine. She's so talented and more in the physical therapy space. But she was like, everyone who came on in 2020, like they're burning out. She was like, you know, she's like, they're not going to stay forever. Like it's going to go back to being like the core, you know, the core folks. And I love that perspective that she brought in, that really like long-term vision, right? Because it is, it's a lot of work and it's not easy to do properly, meaning in terms of like giving value there, but also taking people off of YouTube to your own products. I mean, it's a very weird, I mean, I think that's one thing I do struggle with because it's like, it takes a ton of marketing savvy to figure out like how that freemium model like works and comes together. But I have focused so much, Kaylee, on YouTube and my blog. So let's talk a little bit about blogs. Here's the thing. Instagram, Facebook, like those posts are there and then they're gone. Like it's like you're constantly feeding quarters into this machine and the quarters just keep spitting out the other end. So what I think has really worked for me is I really focus on like what's searchable, what's going to be a long-term asset for my business. Unfortunately, like an Instagram post isn't an asset because Instagram owns it. It's gone. It's like here today, gone tomorrow. I think they say now, like it's like a less than a third of your followers even see it. So it's just very disheartening. While my blog posts are bringing me traffic for years, I have some top-rated blog posts because the blog posts don't go away and Google search is an intent-based platform. Okay, let's break this down. Google and YouTube are intent-based platforms, meaning that someone is going to that system with an intent to Google like how to make birth hurt less. And they might end up on your website or mine, like with prenatal yoga poses, who knows? But like they're going to type in something that they need help with, something that they're struggling with. You know, like beginner Kundalini morning yoga or beginner Kundalini yoga for women. Like they have an idea of something they want and you can fulfill that. And I just love investing in my blog and YouTube because it has that long-term wealth building. It's kind of like a retirement account, right? Where like you invest in it and you put something in there. And then as you keep growing and having more blogs and more videos, a compound interest effect takes place. I don't know very much about finance, but I do know compound interest. And for those who need a review, it's like your savings account, right? Like you put money in and then because it's there, it keeps compounding and growing. And that's why I really don't, I always tell people like my blog, it's like, I can't use it as like a sexy number about subscribers or like a lot of people don't seem to care, but it is the heartbeat of my business.
Oh yes. You know, I thought that there's no way that I could ever win at SEO because there's so many other big companies out there and like I'm brand new and like all these companies have been doing blogs for like decades. And it blew my mind earlier this year, just a little tad, you know, a little note, we do intake surveys for all of our like core programs. So anyone who comes into any of our programs that are over $500, they take a survey. And one of the questions is, how did you find us? And it was last year that started trickling in and actually became pretty, you know, prevalent is a Google search, a Google search, a Google search, a Google search. And I'm like, you literally went to Google to search something and came into my $4,000 doula training program. Like, that is amazing. And it's so cool because, one, it shows that even the imposter syndrome is real no matter what kind of business you have. And I definitely thought until last year, there's no way people will ever find me on Google. I'll never run Google ads. People are never going to like go to Google and like buy my programs. And that's absolutely not true. So thank God that I, you know, put the time and energy into creating a blog. I love to hear that that's something that you're doing too. And it's what I love about blogging too, is that it, like YouTube, it lives forever. So blogging actually is not something that you need to do every single week for the rest of your life. If you know how to do it well, and if you have some blog posts that are doing really well, you could actually put some of your money behind that and, you know, repurpose those blog posts, always update them, things like that. But it's not like Instagram where you feel like, oh, holy shit, I have to post every single day, like every day all the time, like on Instagram. Blogging is not like that.
No, I agree. It's not. And if you want, something I do is I ask where they came from. And then I also ask, what kind of queries were you typing into Google as part of your online teacher training research? Because I want to know, because then I take those to my SEO lead, because she's obviously doing keyword research and we know all the standard terms, but we're always on the lookout for like, what's the kind of weirder new term or a slang way that someone's talking about something And if someone's listening to this and you don't have a business yet and you don't have surveys yet, like just do like a client interview, right? Like you could literally just sit down with your neighbor or someone who's like your ideal type of client and ask them. This is what I tell my students to do. Like, what kind of things are you searching for? What kind of problems do you need solved? Like, what kind of stuff are you typing into Google to help with your, you know, diastasis or blah, blah, like whatever that is they're struggling with. And that's just such valuable information.
At the time of recording this, I just had my team. We have a small team. There's just three of us at this point. We used to have like 9, and I was like, nope, I'm not meant to be like a boss. Let's cut this back. And we're now a small core team of 3. And I had them to my house recently for a retreat. And that's one of the things we talked about that we're going to focus on this year, is that when people say they heard about us from the podcast, that's great, but like that's not actually helpful. It's like, how long have you been a listener? What was the last episode that you listened to before you purchased? You know, what are your favorite episodes? Things like that. That's what's really helpful. And I love it because the reason that Brett and I know each other is because we have a contractor that works for both of us. Her name is Louise. And this is like Louise's magic, is this like customer journey, is like going to figure out where people are actually coming from and then, you know, pouring the gasoline on that part of the business. So, so cool. Okay. I just have to ask, because I can't believe we've been talking for almost an hour. Tell me this transition of like wanting to create a book, because let me tell you, from the outside, there's nothing further than YouTube videos and recording videos for YouTube than going and creating and writing a book. Like that just seems like 180. So tell me like your thought process there. What inspired that?
The book was inspired. My audience was always asking for a book. And then it was really my husband that like kicked my booty and was just like, this is such an important branding piece for you. You know, he really said, because I just was like, why would I write a book when I can put all my knowledge into these courses? And I have these gigantic manuals that I've written that I ship people when they buy our trainings. I was like, I can sell that for like $4,000, $3,000, $8,000. Like, why would I write like a book that's like $11 on Kindle? But he really felt, and I did go the traditional publishing route. So I got a book deal and, you know, did the whole, I felt like it was an important top of funnel piece for the brand. And we'll see how that pans out. Amazon is sort of an intent-based search engine in many ways, like YouTube or like Google. So I do think it's going to open up another avenue for people to be able to get to know me, what I stand for, how I think about yoga. But really, I think it's a legacy building, brand building piece that felt necessary, especially as, you know, I put this in motion even before 2020, but it's like once every yoga teacher training was online, anyone who does research will see that like we're the training that physicians buy, nurses buy. You know, we have so many health professionals in our training because once people really do research and want a serious training, they realize that our anatomy experts, like everything we offer, is the way to go. But a book is really credibility building, right? For someone who maybe doesn't know. So I'm super excited about the book. It's done. It definitely was a big push. It's like having a baby. I mean, you're working on it and it's a long time coming before it comes out, but it's available in bookstores worldwide. Now it's called Yoga Life, if anyone wants to check it out. And it's super fun. It gives you, as we talked about, you know, quizzes that you can take to help you design your ideal 20-minute ritual. Because what I found was once I had two kids and I talk about how my father was dying of cancer, I kind of hit this rock bottom where the way that I used to practice yoga, which was like for an hour or 90 minutes, couldn't happen anymore. And I had to ruthlessly prioritize which breath work, which poses I chose to do. And it led to this sort of decision-making framework rooted in ancient science. The book has so much research. It talks about how yoga came west, all the ways it kind of got, what's the right word? Transformed in that process, let's say. So it's really about you reclaiming your personal practice, moving yoga away from group fitness and discovering your soulmate poses, and then creating this routine that you can expand or contract. So the last chapter in the book is like, how do you make your 20-minute thing 5 minutes? How do you make it 90 minutes based on what's going on in your life, based what season you're in? But it's all yoga to complement your personality. And then there's little yoga habits and lifestyle hacks, because the book is very honest. It's like, some days you won't make it to the mat. And then this is what you can do instead. So it's very doable, approachable, user-friendly. And my body changed so much through pregnancy. Oh my goodness. My soulmate poses pre-kids and my soulmate poses now are very different. So I do think even if someone's a seasoned yogi listening to this, like doing a refresher of what's working for you. And the book, again, makes it very easy. It's like quizzes, worksheets, like sprinkled throughout, QR codes to videos that you can follow along with. My goal is that anyone can get a lot out of it, whether they're into yoga or just curious.
Oh, I can't wait to get my hands on this. I'm so excited. I definitely totally relate to the sometimes other things in life take priority and that's okay. But if you think that the only right way to do yoga is to go to a 60-minute class, you're not going to make it there when your life gets crazy. So to have the skill to really curate like your perfect sequence is really, really cool. And I think especially cool for doulas because, hey, sometimes we go to back-to-back births and we've been at a hospital like literally all day or, you know, for 3 or 4 days straight. And how cool to have something that we can turn to when we have a 20-minute break. And, you know, man, we've been like sitting in the same hunched over pose for 10 hours and we need to go like work it out. And not just like work out our body and stretch it out, but also like get our mind clear again, because supporting birth can feel really hard sometimes and really heavy sometimes. So very, very cool. Tell us again where we can find you. What's your website? And then where's the best place to buy the book?
So my website is brettlarkin.com. That's B-R-E-T-T, like the man's name with two T's, and Larkin, L-A-R-K-I-N.com. On there, you can find all the trainings, all the courses, all the things. You can find the book anywhere books are sold. So if you're an Amazon person, that's awesome. If you want to do bookshop.org or, you know, one of those smaller places, it's available everywhere books are sold, and it's called Yoga Life.
Thank you so much for listening to the podcast. I'm going to put all of Brett's information in the show notes. We'll have a link to her social media and her website and her book if you're interested in her book. I cannot recommend it enough. It has been so amazing becoming friends with Brett and following her on social media and diving into her book and just all of the things. It's been really, really fun. Now, if this is your first time here listening to the podcast, don't forget to hit subscribe. I do new episodes twice per week right now, and it is so much fun. And there are some really big changes coming up, not only in my life, but with everything we're doing behind the scenes at birthworker.com too. So make sure you hit subscribe. The other thing I want to mention is that if you leave a rating and review for the show, just make sure to take a screenshot and upload it to birthworker.com/review. And I actually package up a little surprise gift for everyone who leaves a review for the show. So if you have not done that yet, make sure to do that so I can send you a little goodie bag. And then definitely most important, hit subscribe, because you are not going to want to miss the big events that we have coming up in just a month or so. So hang around, stay tuned, you'll hear more about it. But until then, I will see you back here on Friday.